From Lake Wasota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Back down to Thursday morning with Angela Lang from BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. We've been talking about the work that they do. Angela, I wanted to ask, you know, in terms of why you do it and come back to something you wrote for us in an op-ed 2 years ago now. And you talked about watching the homecoming for John Lewis. And you said, as I watched his casket cross the Edmund Pettus Bridge for the final time, I couldn't help but feel like he was passing the baton to our generation to continue his legacy. That is at the same time, as inspirational as it had to be frightening, that you felt the responsibility, that's on you now.
Yeah, I do this work because it's so personal. I've always kind of been built in this way where I can't just be quiet. If I have an opinion about something, I kind of just have to speak on it. But I think, you know, understanding over the years, it's weird to say this because I just turned 33, but I've been doing this work for 15 years, and there are times I get burnt out and there are times I want to quit, but my spirit is restless. Just let me sit back while literally the world is burning and I feel like I need to do something about it. And I remember watching that funeral and watching it and just how emotional I felt. I did not have the good fortune of being mentored by him like some colleagues I know, but I did meet him and has followed his work and understanding the civil rights era and what the lessons that we can learn now. And I think there's a lot that we're seeing and a lot of parallels. And so for me, I do this work because I love Milwaukee. I love this state. I love democracy. And I feel like sometimes as Black women, those things don't love us back. And so it feels like a bit of a tug of war and kind of a little bit of a battle, but one that I don't feel like I can sit out.
And a good thing too, because there are plenty of people on the other side of the political spectrum that are staying busy and who find little ways and tactics and messages and things that tend to get in the way of the work you're doing. And the whole reason you wrote that op-ed for us back then was, this was when Kanye West was threatening to run, missed the deadline in Wisconsin by like 5 seconds or whatever it was. But you pointed out that this was part of a larger issue. You know, the Black community is not monolithic like any other. There are, Donald Trump actually grew, his percentage of the Black vote reportedly. It's a diverse world in any sector that we're talking about. And yet that has to be, given what we just talked about with John Lewis, somewhat maddening to see that it isn't just, fat old white guys like Donald Trump who are getting in your way.
Yeah, the anniversary of that op-ed was just like a day or two ago, so just a couple of days, and it came up in my Facebook memories and Twitter and whatnot, and I was like, wow, what a strange time. I wrote a whole op-ed about Kanye West running for president. Like, that's a very different time and not an op-ed I ever thought I'd have to write. But at the same time, I'm always reminded, again, kind of going back to the civil rights era, Dr. Martin Luther King, everyone loves to quote him when it's convenient. So, people kind of make the performative quotes on his birthday and whatnot. But he has a quote from the letter of Birmingham Jail talking about the white moderate, and specifically folks that may not be in the pointy white hoods, but people that also may be obstructing progress. And I think these days that will be translated into, the white liberals or the white progressives that are a little problematic or not, need more areas to grow in terms of race and understanding their role in white supremacy. And so even within our our own movements. And, you know, I think that was really displayed with the campaigns. Within our own movements, we have work to do. Seeing either campaigns or supporters of campaigns kind of have these dog whistles when it came to, you know, Mandela Barnes goes to show that there's so much education and so much that we need to do specifically on our side as well. You don't need to wear a pointy white hood to uphold white supremacy these days. We need to constantly evaluate, you know, our own role and how we're uplifting that. And that even comes within our own movement and in our own party and on our side of the aisle as well.
Well, I think as well for, let's say, you know, rural white progressives in trying to convey, you know, messaging properly to our neighbors out here. Mm-hmm. One of the great difficulties is conveying the notions of privilege and systemic racism, something that has a historic legacy, without triggering this gag reflex of somebody saying, Pat, I am not a racist. Stop calling, you know, you can't call me racist. You can't call me privileged. I work hard. I don't have any privilege. You don't, you have privilege. And it's sometimes painful to explain it. And I'm wondering if a lot of us are either going about it the wrong way and trying to explain why these issues are important. It's not that we're looking to tear you, my white rural neighbor, down to get there. This is not a zero-sum game.
I was just about to say, it's not a zero-sum game. You know, they're, instead of fighting each other for slices of the pie, we need to come together and go to the pie makers and say, build a bigger pie so that there's enough for us all. But I think we've operated and, you know, there's systems that have been put in place that allow for us to operate in this way, but we operate from a very much scarcity mentality. You can't have this because it's taking something from me. And I think that that is pitting us against each other. It's pitting people that are marginalized and already hurting and disenfranchised against each other when we need to be coming together to go against what people think of like the 1% or, you know, things like that. I think about the Occupy movement and this 99% versus 1% and how that messaging, I think, was very, very strong. And how people, you know, urban and rural, this urban and rural divide that everyone loves to talk about, we are more alike than we are different. But sometimes race gets in the way from some of these conversations. But how do we kind of strip away some of that? And you know, one example I use is that I sometimes feel like I have a whole lot of other. I am a millennial, pansexual, Black woman. There's a whole lot of marginalization in there. But I also understand that I am cisgender. I am relatively financially stable. I am college educated. So there are these things that also make me privileged and understanding how can I tap into that in a meaningful way. And then where are there times that I need to be more vocal because of my lived experience is not being represented. And so I think being able to take a step back and understand that all of us are privileged in some way and all of us are marginalized in some way, in some ways more than others. And what does it look like to really come together around values? And I think that conversation is missing, but those conversations are hard when every direction we're told to be pitted against each other. But at the same time, as you mentioned, we all want good schools. We all want good jobs. We all want to, you know, provide for our family. If those are the values that we're starting with, how are we able to come together around those things and then also understand each other in other areas as well?
You know, Bill Clinton made it a cliche, you know, that I feel your pain. But, you know, the advice I have frequently given when having these kinds of conversations is that the first step is to acknowledge their own angst, you know, that people whose lives, you know, lifestyles others might be envious of who have a lot less. Those folks still have angst of one degree or another. They have concerns of one degree or another. And it comes back to what you're doing. It's those conversations and you can't. It's not a conversation if you're talking past each other. It's actually listening and having a sense of empathy. And that has to work both ways, not just for, you know, again, rural white people, but, you know, Blacks in big cities who may not appreciate what some rural families are going through that might, I don't know, lose their farm or their rural school might close or what have you. We have to have more of that listening.
Yeah, you know, one thing I always wanted to see, and I think sometimes this comes about with campaigns, but would love to see this outside of a campaign season, you know, next summer, even when there's no campaigns on the horizon? What does it look like to have a bus tour across the state? You stop in each congressional district and you just have a conversation. You have a diverse panel of folks from all over the state, if possible. But just to have that conversation, you know, people are struggling in every corner of the state, not just Milwaukee, and not just southeastern Wisconsin. People are struggling in their own way. And so I think about how are we able to get into a room and to talk about these things. One thing I always wanted to see is that I want folks, you know, on farms to say, yes, I support Black Lives Matter. Even though I don't live there, I see injustice, and that's not right, because that is my fellow person. That's my fellow Wisconsinite. I want people in Milwaukee to care about the struggles of dairy farmers and what it means when prices are increasing and inflation and farmers are having more issues. How does that impact our community and our needs? And I want us to be able to have these conversations. And I think a lot of ways it's due to ignorance. And I think we say ignorance in like a bad way, like there's this ignorant, you're ignorant. And you know, that's a harsh term. But there's also just like genuine ignorance of like, I have never, you know, been on a farm. I've gone to state fair. My family has some farms, but I personally have not been on a farm. And so I am ignorant in that regard. But what does it look like to have all of us sit down and to come together? And maybe we need to take it back to something that I did in middle school. We kind of did a school swap, which mm-hmm. kind of made me feel bad at the point. But, you know, we had a school that was not a part of the Milwaukee Public School District come in and shadow our team or our students. And they were like, oh, this is your art class. This is your gym. Oh, that's very different from my school. And they spent the day at our school. And then the next week we spent a day at their school. And I was like, you all get to ski? What is this like, right? And so we saw these conversations as kids of not only the disparities, but then also how we were different as individuals and how we were raised. And I think sometimes we just need to go back to that.
I could not possibly agree more. It was something we talked about during my time in the legislature, and I always regret that we couldn't make that happen. It's about helping people understand everybody. Everybody is, in fact, marginalized in some degree. For that dairy farmer, it might be the monopolies of the big, you know, agribusiness companies that are keeping their crop prices low. And I know some people would come back at that and say, oh, so you want everybody to feel like a victim. No, this isn't about a culture of victimhood. And whenever you're, you know, accusing somebody else of that, I mean, again, you're just demonstrating a lack of empathy for them. Everybody does have an area where they're marginalized. And all that means is they can use their voice, they can gather with other people, and as you said, make that pie a little bit bigger.
Yeah, I come from the school of organizing where we talk about strength in numbers, right? Instead of me being in my corner trying to fight for political power or a seat at the table, we're coming together. And that's part of the Block model, right? Is being able to have folks that understand and coming together. And we're organizing our community so we can have strength in numbers, but it's also important for other communities to work together. You know, whether it's Black and Brown communities, Milwaukee is incredibly segregated. So we need to make a point to continuously to be intentional with working together. And at the same time, we want to be intentional with working with other folks too, not in the city. And I think being able to have, I just keep harping on it, like having those conversations, I think is just the first step in order to do that. And it's not about, you know, people feeling like, oh, everyone should be a victim. No, we're all highlighting that we collectively are struggling in this way and we're pushing back. It's building people power. And I think it's actually the opposite of saying, oh, everyone's being a victim. We're putting people in a position of strength where people are coming together to demand the needs and to make sure that all communities across the state of Wisconsin are thriving, which is what we deserve.
We don't have enough time in there. It's not like anything's going to happen with voting rights additionally, sadly, although it should. So instead of voting rights and what things have gotten in the way, we'll end on just getting people to vote and making it easier on them, which I am sure is one of your big functions between now and November is helping people empowered, don't give up, actually register, actually vote.
Yeah, we got our work cut out for us. You know, we do that by knocking on doors, texting and phone banking and building those relationships, but also things like we have a back to school giveaway at the end of the month. So we're also kind of showing up as full people in order to kind of have those deeper conversations and more meaningful conversations. But this election is about turning out as many people as possible, people that maybe only show up for presidential elections. It's going to come down to turnout and it's going to be very, very close, probably, is my assumption. And so all of us kind of all have a job to do, not just Block, but all of us got to take that extra time talking to a couple more family members and making sure they're coming out.
Oh yeah, because there isn't 100% voter turnout, which means there's always work to do. And Angela Lang is doing that from Block. Thank you so much. This was delightful, and I hope we get to talk again real soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, and we will wrap up the show next. You're up north.